and we went through the three friends of Job and their paradigm of God is different from one another. Then we had the paradigm of Job, right? How each man looks at the creator of heaven and earth and how he expects the creator of earth to respond. Now, instead of reading the rest of the entire part, we're going right to the fourth man, which is in Job, the 32nd chapter. This man is a very interesting young man. Well, he was young then. in that God did not correct him, chastise him, or say anything negative about him. Only the other three friends did he do so. So you got a picture here of a very interesting man. We'll just start out right there in the 32nd chapter, verse 1. And these three men ceased answering him because he, Job, was righteous in his own eyes. Oh, so we have a pattern here that this young man is going to bring out something that we perhaps did not recognize. As we read, if you continue on reading the statements of Job throughout the entire book of Job up until this point, you'll see a pattern of a man who was, in a sense, we would call righteous according to man's eyes, especially unto Job's own eyes. So Job's paradigm is he is right, he is just, and God went to war against him for no reason whatsoever. That's where he is at. And this young man, very interesting name, then the wrath of Elihu, very interesting name, Elihu. El is God, E is my, who is he? He is my God. That's his name. This is what this particular young man is named. He's named that he is my God. And he comes from a family of the son of Barachel. Now, El is the latter part of that name is God. The first part of it is blesses. So he comes from, he's the son of a man that God blesses. That's the man, his father's name was translated, God blesses. So it's funny, his name means he is my God. His father's name was God blesses. And he comes from the Buzit. Now, breaking that word down took a little while for me. I couldn't figure it out because it almost seems the opposite of a negative thing. Found out the verb of it. And basically translated it into English. That the one held insignificant. Now, the reason why I've played on that word is because basically it has to do with he being the insignificant one of the four. All right? He is less than the four. And now he's going to start speaking. Of course, he was mad against Job. He's also mad against his three friends. And verse 3, also against his three friends, his wrath was aroused, his anger, because they had found no answer to all the challenging that Job has done. They couldn't give Job an answer, but just did one thing. They just kept on condemning Job. That's not the object. The object was to be able to give an answer to this man who considered himself more right, more upright. Remember, God said he was the most upright of the East. Yes, he was. He was the most upright man of the East, of that country called Edom, And he provided for people, and he justified anything he ever did based upon what he was, what we call today, a do-gooder. A do-gooder had an awful lot of wealth, awful lot of power, awful lot of might, and a mighty army. Now, it's very interesting here that we keep on going down. So keep that part in mind, because we need to try to find out exactly what the story is all about. Anyway, he continues on here for a while. Let's drop down to verse 6. And Elihu, the son of Barachel, the insignificant one, answered and said, I, young in years, and you, very old, speaking to the three. Therefore, I shrunk back. Some of your translation says, I was afraid. But in Hebrew, it says, I shrunk back, or I held back what I was going to think and say to you. Because why? And dared not declare my opinion to you, or his thoughts, what he was seeing. And he said to himself, he said, look, I have said, you age should speak, and multiply, a multiple of years should show wisdom. And a spirit in man, or a spirit in the three men, basically, and the breath of El Shaddai gives him understanding. However, that's what age should do to you when you're old. Now, where does wisdom come from? From El Shaddai, from Almighty, from Elohim. That's where wisdom comes from. Now, how does God teach you wisdom? I'm sorry, what?
Fear of the Lord.
Fear of the Lord, all right. How do you get wisdom? How do you go about getting wisdom? When God gives you wisdom, what does he do? How does he do it?
Make mistakes.
He does you what?
Make mistakes.
You make mistakes?
Read his word.
Read his word.
He
does right there. Okay, let's get personal. Let's get personal. Let's get one-to-one basis. Where has God done and given you personal wisdom? In suffering or in what's called trials. Trials teaches you something that God is teaching you. He's teaching you what? Wisdom. All right. So all your trials that you have done in your life, sometimes you think you brought it upon yourself. Let me ask you, did Job, quote, bring these trials upon himself, or did God? God brought them on himself, on him. So we have to know that's how God works. Now, if you don't, later on, this particular man says, if you don't respond to God, then something else is going to happen to you. All right? It's not a pleasant thing. We probably won't get there today. Verse 9, he says now about these three men, these men are not wise. Why aren't they not wise? Because God didn't give them wisdom. That's pretty powerful words, aren't they? Pretty powerful words. So every time you have a trial, a difficulty, a hardship in life, no matter how long it is or how short it is, it's for God giving you wisdom. Why do I need wisdom for? All I want to know is how to get to work back and forth again. I want to get my paycheck. I just want something to eat. What's wise about that? And of course, that's the problem of man. God didn't create us that way. How did he create you? He created you to perish. I said, why did you do that for? He says, I've created you to perish. Now, before I perish you, eliminate your life, I want to give you some wisdom. This is where Job is at this point. What good was that? What did I gain from all of this? Everything's wiped out. Everything's destroyed. Nothing's there. And I'm an old man. Verse 11, indeed, I waited for my words. I waited on your words. I listened to your reasoning, these three men, while you searched out what to say. I, verse 12, paid close attention to you, and surely not one of you convinced Job. Not one of you answered his words. 32. We're at the youngest man now. I'm going right through that toward the end of the book. I don't need to go through. Well, we could go through. This is not my normal pattern. My normal pattern is going chapter by chapter, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. But it'll take too long. And I don't want to stay too long on this one because a question came up about, you know, what is God really like? It's the devil made me do it, you know. Or the devil's on my case. Look, God's on the case. And Job already said, why have you put the serpent over me? Oh, you mean when the devil comes and does you harm, that God had no knowledge of it? He was a dummy? What happened? What happened to you? Oh, the devil got you? Oh, I'm so sorry. I wasn't paying attention to you. Is that what God does? That includes the Garden of Eden. We won't go there today. But keep that in mind. Verse 15, they were dismayed and answered no more. The words escaped them. They couldn't, even the 3 men couldn't talk to this young man. They drops down to, let's go to verse 20. I will speak that I may find relief. He talked earlier about being in he's like a wine being, you know, fermented and there's no escape for the gas. And lo and behold, the whole thing blows up. That's how he said he feels. He says, now I speak that I may get relief. And he's gonna let the air out from the wine being fermented. All right. I must open my lips and answer. Let me not, I pray, show partiality to anyone, nor let me flatter any man. For I do not know how to flatter. My maker would soon take me away if I flatter. So we know this man is a young. We don't know how old he is. Definitely is young in years. Chapter 33. Now he's going to talk and address Job himself in this particular chapter. He's addressed the three older men. And now he's addressing Job. Please, Job, hear my speech and listen to all my words. Verse 4. The spirit of Elohe has made me, and the breath of Almighty gives me life. Verse 7. Surely no fear of me will terrify you, nor will my hand be heavy upon you. Surely you have spoken in my hearing, and I have heard the sounds of words. As he patiently paid close attention to the 3 men's words and diligently understood them, what they were saying, they gave him no answer. Now he says, Job, I heard your words, just like I heard your 3 friends' words. So what did he hear? You remember some of it. Verse 8. Surely you have spoken in my hearing, and I have heard the sounds of words. Quote. This is Job's words. I, Job, pure without transgression. I, Job, innocent, and no iniquity in me. Yet he, Elohe, finds occasions against me, and he, Elohe, counts me as his enemy, and he, Elohe, puts my feet in the shackle, in the stocks, and he, Elohe, watches all my paths. Remember he talked about, we read that last week, where it's his foot or in stocks, he can't move, and everywhere, he can't go, he can walk anywhere. That God knows exactly where he's going at. See, now, he is saying, this is what he quoted to what Job said. Elihu quoted what Job said. Now, verse 12. What did Elihu say? Look, this you are not righteous. What you just said. I will answer you. For Elohe is greater than man. Why do you contend with him? For he does not give. He does not give an account of any of his words. You can't. God does not explain why he does what he does. He just does it. He doesn't have to have a court. He doesn't have to have a hearing. He doesn't have to have an explanation of what he's doing. God is God. And he can do and say whatever he wants. Including verse 14. For Elohe may speak in one way or in another. And man doesn't perceive it, doesn't understand it. In a dream? In a vision? God uses those two. Verse 16. This is interesting. When he opens the ears of men and seals their instructions. When God opens up your ears or my ears, he then therefore seals up their or your what? Instructions. What is he going to teach you? When God opens it up, he starts talking to you, and he seals the instructions, or their instructions, what he is instructing them to do, he seals it within them. Now, have you ever tried to get out of doing something that God wants you to do when you know that's what he wants you to do? Because it's sealed there. You can't walk away from it. That's the instruction. What do you do with the instructions? Even if it is a very dangerous following. How many times have you seen in the stories of the Bible where a man had to go to war, he didn't want to go to war, but he did. Remember Abraham? Do you think he was a warrior? Likes to go out and declare war, defeat our nation after nation after nation after nation? He defeated four and wiped them all out. Did he go back to have great power, great might, great strength? No. Did he want to do that? No. But God incensed him by, your nephew? They got him. Go get him. And so, that's exactly what Abraham did. So, they had instructions to go do it. He did it. I want to go down. Well, let's go to verse 17 here. It says, and he, Elohe, in order to turn man's deeds, to turn them around what they're doing, he conceals the pride from man. That's a very unusual statement. What do you think it means? He seals the instructions, and then he does something else. What does he do? He hides your pride. That doesn't mean hide. It means he actually is removing it. Your pride can no longer be found. You become not a proud man. You become a humble one. You understand what that means? He doesn't hide it so you can find it later. He hides it. And it's gone forever. Hiding does not mean you get to find it. Yes, Bill.
Would that be like you wouldn't take it on yourself as your idea for doing something?
Yes. Simple as that. Very, 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 very simple. Simple logic. Yes.
It doesn't mean like, a man can't really see himself. Other people can see what you're doing and how you are prideful like Eliu saw that in Job, but Job couldn't see it in himself. That would be hidden.
Well, the reason is because of the man, the young man, was representing later on, says, I am speaking for Elohe. He's representing Elohe in this thing. And all of a sudden, Elohe starts talking. So he's basically a very special individual that God sent. He was not a friend of Job.
No.
He was not one of Job's friends. He was just a young man and didn't really, and he didn't even say nothing. He didn't come to mourn with Job for 7 days. Keep that point in mind. The three other men, yes, but not this man. God sent him there for a reason. And he says, I'm representing Elohe here. Let's drop down to verse 19. He also chastens with pain on his bed. That is, Elohe is also chastened with pain on his bed and with a strong pain of many of his bones. That's exactly what happened to Job, right? He was couldn't sleep at night, couldn't stay awake. I mean, daytime was miserable, nighttime was miserable. And he had to sit on ashes. Now, this is a very fascinating thing. Let's go down to verse 22 for just a moment. I find this fascinating. I don't know if I have an answer to it, but I want to read it anyway. That's the way I am sometimes, right? Yes, his, the man's soul, draws near the pit, I mean the grave, and his life to the executioners. If there is a messenger for him who is drawn to the pit and to the executors, a mediator, one among myriads, to show him his, God's, uprightness. Verse 24, then he, Elohe, is gracious to him and says, who's he talking to? The mediator. He's going to send a mediator. He's going to say to the mediator, draw him from, deliver him from the ground of the pit. I have found a ransom. Wow. This is the book of Job. The oldest known writing in the entire Tanakh. That's a fascinating phrase, isn't it? Do I understand it? I think so. But I thought that was very fascinating when he says, a mediator. Mediator among myriads or thousands. Who is going to be the mediator? Well, New Testament tells us who it is, right? Did Elihu know that? Well, looked like he said, yeah. He knew it. Because he's speaking with wisdom and with the words of God. And he says, verse 25, his flesh shall be young like a child's, and his return the days of his youth. When you're delivered out of hell, everything changes. The mediator will deliver you. The mediator is not going to deliver you just from the grave. The mediator is going to deliver you and has this ransom, and lo and behold, you be like a child. Remember what the Messiah said? Be you like little children? That's fascinating to look at this thing, isn't it? You mean, way back then? This is how I look at it. I don't know if it's really true, how it says, but it's ancient writing. It's really hard for them to decipher everything in the book of Job. But if this decising, if this wording is correct, I find it extremely fascinating. Verse 27. When he, Elohe, looks at a man that says, very important, it's not written that way in your translations, but other translations it has it, I have sinned and perverted right and it did not profit me. Verse 28. He will redeem his soul, Elohe, will redeem his soul from going down to the pit, and his life shall see the light. Fascinating words, aren't they? Like almost paralleling New Testament words, aren't they? That he is the light. And you become a light. You become a light. We are to become lights of the world. I found that fascinating when I read that from him. What's your thoughts? If there were any thinking on it. Job is a really interesting book. I find it very fascinating. And I really like it in a poetic form rather than trying to make sentences out of things. Makes no sense to my mind. 34, chapter 34. We're moving along rapidly because I want to be able to finish all of this, what he said today, before we get into the final thing, what God is saying. Yes?
Question about the word life in that statement from verse 28. Is that nephesh? Is that the spirit? Or is that life like?
Light.
Is that life the spirit or not the flesh?
Well, I'll put it this way. Take it how you see it. How's that? Take it how you see it. We are to be the light of the world. We have this new moon. We are to become the light of the world. So it includes that this man is saying that when God brings you back up out of the pit, you will be a light. You will be a light. And in Hebrew it means to be able to see things and understand things and be able to show people and teach people the truth. Basically, that's what it boiled down to. Both that and I believe it also has that meaning, secondary meaning in Greek. Chapter 34. Now, he's back again addressing the three men, the three friends. You kind of tell how it's worded. Hear my words, O you wise, meaning the three. Give ear to me, you who have knowledge. They claimed they had knowledge. Remember they kept on telling, Job, we have knowledge. We have wisdom. For the ear tests words, and the palate tastes food. Let us choose justice for ourselves, and let us know among ourselves what is good. Then he says, for Job has said, quoting Job now, this is Job's paradigm, however views God, I am righteous, but Elohe has taken away my justice. Should I lie concerning my right? My wound incurable. The wound incurable without transgressions. I have been wounded and I can't get healed and I did not transgress. That's Job's center. I know maybe some of you might have met people or know people that do that or think that. Maybe you yourself have thought that God has been on my case for no reason whatsoever. I didn't do anything wrong. We're not saying that your past. But God says if he forgets your past, it's forgotten. So he doesn't bring the past back up. He brings what's there up. He brings what's present up. What's going on right now in our life, in this case with Job's life, what was going on in Job's life right then and there. Those are pretty strong words, don't you think? Verse 5 and verse 6. They said against God, or talked against God, or accused God, or should we say that God's unfair, God's not just, God is an unjust God. Basically, that's what he's saying in another language or another word in our modern English. Verse 9, he has said, Job, it profits a man nothing that he should delight in Elohe. Woo! Yes.
Oh, verse number 5, please. For Job hath said, I am righteous, and God hath taken away my judgment. What is judgment?
Actually, in Hebrew, that's not judgment, it's justice.
Justice.
Justice. Verse 10. Therefore, listen to me, you men of understanding, talking to the three, far be it from Elohe wickedness and the Almighty to iniquity. See, this is what Job charged God with. When he says, you have unjustly put and made me your enemy, I, Job, am charging you for the harm that you've done to me for no reason. Now, I know it's really hard for us to picture someone ever dare say it to God. That's because we have this wonderful thing called hindsight. We get to look what happened in the past and we look forward to, well, I'm not going to do that. But see, you weren't Job. Nor are you Job's wife. Nor are you Job's son. Nor are you Job's daughter. All of a sudden, we have the oldest book known. Bam! It's hard. What would your approach be? What would your thinking be? See, it's easy for the other three men to always judge, condemn, and persecute Job because he was not connected to God according to the first man's paradigm, and he was not connected to God according to the second man's paradigm. He was not connected to God according to the third man's paradigm. And of course, Job wasn't connected to God with Job's paradigm. But Job didn't know that fully yet. See, we can be harsh on Job. But what's the meaning of this whole book? How should we look at one another? How should we approach one another? He says, now, if your brother has sinned, what are you supposed to do then? Talk to him when? In private. And the prophet says, a righteous man will hear and change. All right? Now, since Job did not answer this young man and have word back with him, it's pretty assurance that Job heard and did not answer back. Keep that in mind. If the three friends just accused him, this man is saying, Job, this is your transgression. This is your sin. This is your iniquity. Did Job hear? He didn't answer back. Maybe he didn't want to. No, this is written for a reason. Yes.
That's what David did when, what was the prophet there that said something, and then David said, oh, they ought to take him out and stone him. He says, you're the man. He says, you're right. That's probably what the same thing you're saying, isn't it?
One thing you know about David, King David, he was a righteous man because he would take correction. And he'd respond to the correction real quick. That's one thing good about him. That's why he was a righteous man. All right, verse 17. Should one who hates justice govern? Well, Job said, God, you're unjust. You don't know what justice is. Now this young man is saying, oh, should one who hates justice govern? Will you condemn the most just? Capital M and capital J. Would you say to a king, worthless, to a noble, wicked? Yet he, Elohe, is not partial to princesses. Sorry, Job. You're not on his favorite list. Sorry, you three friends. He's not on his favorite list. I'm not on his favorite list. I'm also made of clay. Their God has no favorites. Nor does he regard the rich more than the poor. Now we think, oh, yes he does. Or no, he doesn't. He regards the poor more than he does the rich. No, he doesn't regard them. He doesn't consider their thoughts, their mind, their ideas, their justice is not there. For they are all the work of his hand. Really? I don't believe that, do you? When man is wealthy, I thought it was work of the man's greed. When a man is poor, I thought it was because of his foolishness. But it says here, he doesn't favor one or the other. They are all his work. So you don't have much. Don't complain and say, God, why didn't you make me rich like that guy did? You remember the fiddler on the roof thing? If I was a rich man. Everybody has that wish that they had enough money. You know what? I'd be happy. No, you wouldn't. You'd be just the way you are now. You'd just be, the money doesn't change that. Well, I don't be poor. Well, you're poor. You're still the same way. Because you are who you are. You are the way that you are. God had, I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry,
what
did you say? I said, I'd
still
like to find out.
Now, because, I'll put this word here. Because of God's great mercy towards you, he won't put you there. Otherwise, he'll destroy you. You wish you were someplace else. You wish you had all. Because within us, there always this incredible power of what's called lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. That is not gone from us until we're in the pit. Then it's not there anymore. Nor is anything else. Alright. So, I graduate. Sometimes I ask God, as many years ago, I just need a little more money so I can get out of debt. I went deeper in debt. Oh. I guess your answer was no. Yes, it was no. Okay. It's funny, but you know, that's the way it is with God. It caused me to be humble toward God and say, what you have in store, help me just to be able to endure it. And then that's when he'll move in and he helps. He helps each one of us in that way, don't you think? Toward the end of the chapter.
That's why he says, in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you.
Verse 35, we're going through this book and chapter pretty quickly because I want to wrap this thing up. Verse 35. Now this is what the man is saying. Job speaks without knowledge, his words without wisdom. Oh, that Job were tried to the utmost, because he, Job, answered those three men. Verse 36. This is the wicked one. Those three men had no wisdom, They had no justice. They had no knowledge. Even though they said they did, even they claimed they did, all they did was condemn Job. Now, you start condemning somebody, you're at fault. And so this young man is saying, Job answered them. Remember? Job talked back to them. And he is saying, Job speaks without knowledge, his words without wisdom to those three men. All right? For he, this is an interesting statement, adds rebellion to his sin. When he spoke to or have answers to those three men. Now remember, we went through some of the things that Job said. And what she said is it's almost a state of rebellion. Because that's what it boiled down to. To the point where when you try to give an answer for what God has done to you, and somebody comes up and tells you the reason why God did this to you because you don't fast enough, and you answer back and accuse them of something they don't know about at all, because you probably do fast. Well, you don't pray to God enough. The reason why you do, because you don't pray to God. And Job answered back. You don't look upon the needy. Job answered back. Justifying himself. For everything they had charged him with, he came through to justify his actions. Or lack of action, because it would be unjust in his justice mind to be able to do something or should be doing something. You ever met somebody that way? Never justify your actions toward anybody. Now you may have to do it in a court of law, but just tell them the facts. And let them figure out whether or not you are just or unjust. Start out with verse 2. Do you think it's right? Do you say, my righteousness is more than Elohim's? Verse 3. For you say, Job, what advantage will it be for you? What profit shall I have then or when I sin? What is a profit to you, God? You have no value to me. I will answer, now the young man is saying, I will answer you, Job, and your companions with you. Look, this is a very fascinating thing. At first I didn't quite grab it until I reached out and thought about what he's trying to say. Look at the heavens and see. Behold the clouds. They are higher than you. If you sin, Job, what do you accomplish against him, the Creator? Or your transgressions are multiplied. What does that do to him? Stop and think about what he's saying. If you transgression against God's word, what does it do to God? Is he in pain, suffering, agony, or are you in pain and suffering agony because he's going to have to make you pay for it? Boils down to, and he says this, man will have to pay for his cost. Now, verse 7, I wanted to find out very, very fascinating words. Very, very powerful words from this young man. If you are righteous, what do you give him? So, he's saying, if you sin, you give nothing to God. And if you do that which is righteous, you give nothing to God. What can you give to God? Your righteousness? What can you give to God? Your sins? What can you give to God? What do you want him for? Why would God want man's righteousness? What value is it to him? This is what the young man is saying, yes. Not with Job. Job, he's correcting Job for being, right, remember the very first part of this word? He is self-righteous. Job is righteous within inside himself. He judged righteousness based upon man's judgment, man's sins, man's transgressions, man's inequity, man's judgments, because that's how he ruled his kingdom. That's the way the man was. And man liked it. They liked it. He was the most greatest of them all, most powerful of them all. He was the righteous of them all. And, he was a nice guy. You cannot deny he was a nice guy. His very first friend says, look at all you did. Wow, what monarch or king or tyrant would do that? Not a one, but Job did. So now he's looking at this thing, and he's saying to Job, this young man is saying to Job, okay, your wickedness, verse 8, affects a man such as you, and your righteousness of man affects you. Now, what does that mean? Let me ask you a question. Don't answer it. In your heart, would you like for people to see you being a just man or a just woman? Would you like for people to see that you are kind and generous and loving and your judgment is good, not bad? And they say, oh, look, I like this person. The righteousness is good. I wish I would be that righteous. So I started this series and I said, if I could live up to one half of the righteousness that Job lived up to, I would consider myself a righteous man. But I can't, because I couldn't even live up to half that distance if he did. He had the money, he had the power, he had the wealth, he had the fortitude, he had the army, he had everything he needed at his ploy. He uses an analogy here now about when a multitude of people are oppressed by a mighty army, no one says, where is Elohim, my maker, who gives me song in the night? When you are oppressed, when a war breaks out, the first thing you don't think about is, where's God? You think about something else. Verse 12, and it says, and they then cry out. But what does he do? He doesn't answer them. Why? Because of the pride of evil men. Stop for a moment, please. What does this mean? Let's say a country outright goes to war against another country that has no way to protect itself. And our thinking is that country that did the oppression is the wicked one. And the people now don't have a country. They're now slaves. And they cry out to God to deliver them. And why didn't God deliver them? Because of what? Pride of evil men, or the pride of man itself. Lots of times when there is a war, it's not because man likes to go to war, because God has sent the oppressor to do it. I'll give you an example. Nebuchadnezzar, he raised him up to go to war against an unjust and proud people. And we say, well, that's not right. They weren't unjust. They were not pride people. They're humble. Not according to God's eyes. And we go into the kings over and over again. How far he was long and waiting and waiting and waiting. And all these kings that did evil had a lot of pride inside themselves. And the followers that followed them had a lot of pride in themselves. And the people, more than likely, also had pride in themselves. After all, they are the people of God. They are the people of God. The others are not. Are you a people of God? Verse 13, surely Elohe will not listen to empty, nor will he, will the Almighty, regard it. Meaning your empty words, Job, basically. Although you say you do not see him, you do not see justice before him, and you must wait for him. You have to wait for him. Do I have to wait for the Lord? Job wanted an answer now. Well, he'll get one now. Anyway, we'll get there. And now, because he has not punished in his anger, nor take much notice of folly, doesn't pay attention to foolishness. He doesn't punish people completely in their anger. What he does, therefore, Job opens his mouth in vain, and multiply words without knowledge. Chapter 36. Drop down to verse 7. He does not withdraw his eyes from the righteous, but on the throne of kings, for he has seated them forever. Well, that's actually called Olam. And they are exalted. And if bound in fetters, held in the cords of affliction, then he, Elohim, tells them their work and their transgressions, that they have acted defiantly. Now, even though he put them in power, they're supposed to do something, and they're supposed to stay there, basically each other dead. But if they have done others, while they're in power, they do something contrary, he's going to have a word with them. And we're learning through the book of Kings, right? God is upset with this one. God's upset with that one. God was upset. That one, he was pleased with God, but had him go with his fathers. That one, upset with him. I mean, you know, when you're in power, you're supposed to stay there until you're dead. That means forever. That means forever eternity. It means until you're dead and someone else takes over. He also opens up their ears to instructions and commands that they turn from their iniquity. He's given them, these leaders, a chance. If they obey and serve, they shall spend their days in prosperity and their years in pleasantness. But if they do not obey, they shall perish by the sword. They will die with no knowledge. Verse 21. Take heed, Job. The priest how powerful words right here, right now. Pay attention, Job. Do not turn to iniquity. For you have chosen this rather than affliction. He's saying to Job, look, you have call God unjust. You call God unfair. You've called God, there's no profit to worship him, no profit to be with him, no profit whatsoever. It's a losing end with him, no matter what you do, what you think, what you say. He says that's heading for iniquity. Pretty heavy charge, don't you think? Don't go that way, Job. Behold, Elohe is exalted by his power. Who teaches like him? Who assigns him his ways? Who has said to Elohe, you have done wrong? Guess who said that? Job. He goes down now. He's talking about this is very interesting. I want to talk about the storms and the clouds. Verse 29, indeed, can anyone understand the spreading of clouds? He thunders from his canopy. Look, he scatters his light, that means lightning, upon it and covers the depths of the sea. For by these he judges the peoples and gives food to the abundant. Now, You mean he actually brings forth a storm, a lightning, to do something? It's to do what? Judge the people. If the people respond, they get food. Now it says he covers, or the translation's not very good. He holds in his hands with lightning and commands where it is to strike. Now, of course, we know that's not true, right? Scientifically, that's not there. It's because of the weather pattern, which God lost control of. He had no idea where lightning is going to strike. Oh, there! Oh, what happened there? I'm out of control. I can't control lightning anymore. Is that what he says? Now, when you have lightning, what does it do to you if it's close to you? It what? Very, very frightening, yes. I'm sorry, what?
In Psalms, he says he guides
the What's so fascinating about it? Listen, a little fascinating to this thing. He covers his hands and he commands them where to strike. There's a very interesting part here I want to go to. It's the next chapter. Chapter 37. We're almost finished. Drop down to verse 11. Chapter 37, verse 11, about the power of God. See, we kind of expect the power of God to be different than it really is. We expect him to, I'm sorry, deliver the little boy, the little girl, out of danger when a car comes. Right? Or we expect the little boy or little girl, maybe a woman, maybe a man, who is in severe illness. And they expect him to deliver them out of the illness. Now, they're not denying it. But here he's saying, you don't know the power of God. Why is he doing this? Verse 11, chapter 37, we're almost finished. Also with the moisture, he scatters the thick clouds. I mean, they turn black, right? He scatters those dark, thick clouds. You ever see a dark cloud? You know it's going to rain, right? And see, he scatters its bright clouds. Takes the way. The bright clouds are gone. Just the dark ones are there. And they whirl about, being turned by Habba's dance. By his what? His guidance. What does that sound like, a hurricane or a tornado? Whirl. It twists. He takes it and twists it. And as his commands them on the face of the whole earth. He causes it to come, whether for correction from his hand or mercy from his hand. How would a whirlwind give you mercy? After it's over with, you're still alive. It's merciful. I know toward the end of it, this chapter, verse the end of it, this is the last time the man spoke. He spoke a lot of things in this thing, and I couldn't very well talk about an awful lot of stuff because I want to get a lot of chapters from 32 to 37. It's an awful lot, this man said. Nowhere in all these chapters did Job challenge him, question him about anything. He didn't answer back. He answered back constantly with his other three friends. To justify his actions, his deeds, and his thoughts, this man, Job, didn't even open up. And this man challenged him. You got something to say to me, Job? Say it. What if you don't? Then shut up and listen. I'm using the English language here, but behold, be silent. And I'll tell you, you know. This man apparently was, you know, actually preparing him to face his creator. Which is, starts the next chapter. And he says here now, very last two verses. Verse 23. The Almighty, we cannot find out his excellence and power. That we don't now find out how he can do it, how he does it. It's just there. We cannot find out his judgments and his abundance of justice. Because man has no really idea how God really looks at things. And these three men, They thought they had it. They thought they had it. They thought they knew the judgment of God. They thought they knew the justice of God. And he says, no, you don't. And not even this young man said he knew. Therefore, men fear him. Did you get that? The reason why you, myself, mankind, our country, our cities, our towns, our family, our brothers, our sisters, our moms, our dads, our children, our sons, our daughters, the reason why we can't find out, we don't know and understand his excellency of his power, how powerful he really is, because he doesn't exercise that. Now, it did at the flood. And only 8 people survived to tell a story. All right? Nor do we understand his judgment or when his judgment is going to come. Remember what the Messiah said? I'm going to come in broad daylight so you all can see me at the same time. I'll come very gentle with kindness and love and compassion. And you'll spot me out real quick. And I'll give you plenty of time for, 24 hours to straighten yourself out before I, come all the way. Oh, he's going to come that way? He's going to come when, I'm sorry, any human being, including the Messiah himself, when he said that, no man knows. This is the only thing that he said. I'm going to come as a thief. In the night. That doesn't mean he's going to hit Jerusalem at midnight and it's daylight halfway around the world. That night means unexpectedly, unknowingly. And you nor do I know, quote, the excellency in his power. Neither you nor do I, nor does anybody know his judgment. Neither you nor I does anybody know his justice. That's why we should fear him. Keep ourselves on guard. Make sure we're walking the best way we know how to walk. Because he shows no partiality. No one's a favorite. No one comes up and says, well, he was wiser than the other one in heart. So I will have mercy upon him. Doesn't say that. The righteous do perish. And the unrighteous also perish. The righteous goes to the pit and knows nothing. The unrighteous goes to the pit and knows nothing. Now, this is a very powerful book, don't you think? Hope we're kind of looking at it from another point of view. And we're going to, next week, I'm going to try to wrap it all up and what God has to say to Job. And it's the rest of the end of the book that he terrifies Job. He really scares him. He frightens him an awful lot. Okay. When I get past the book of Job, I'll go on to the book of Exodus. Exodus. Yes.
Christ said in the New Testament, he says, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent, and you have revealed them unto babes. So I think those who are of a humility, like you explain,
Well, yeah, but he didn't explain or provide and show them how powerful he is, nor did he show them his judgment, nor did he show them his justice. That's a different subject matter and altogether. What he's talking about in that chapter is about who the Messiah really is. And you've hidden it from others. Actually, who the Son of God is, in a sense, but he says Messiah.